Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, the talk. My guest is John Lewis. He's a partner at Lawrence & Bundy, which is the largest black-owned law firm in Atlanta. He's also the former chief of litigation at Coca-Cola and the chief diversity officer at Coca-Cola, which is why I want to talk to him about the talk. And for folks that look like me, the term the talk probably doesn't mean very much, but for black folks, the term the talk has a very specific meaning. John, take it away.
Absolutely. And David, thank you for having me. It's good to be here. Always good to have this and other talks. I think our pathway to a lot of the current confusion that we experience as a community now is because we don't talk enough, so I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, tell me, you know, the talk within the black community has a very specific meaning of parents talking to sons. Tell me about the talk and why it's needed for white folks, for people who don't have to have the talk. Why is this something that is emblematic, perhaps, of where we are right now in our society?
Sure, and maybe it's appropriate for me to start at a personal level about this and describe this conversation as my parents had it with me as a 16-year-old teenager and growing up in Houston, Texas. When I started to drive, my parents pulled me aside and sort of explained to me that while generally it was a good idea to respect authority and to follow authority, that the consequences of any transgressions of that for me might be more dire than they might be for other people. To remember a little bit about what was going on, I'm sure, in Houston and many of the other major cities in this country back in the late 70s, early 80s, relations with the police were pretty bad. The Houston Police Department at the time had a number of fairly notorious cases where there were allegations that the police had roughhoused and in many instances injured and a couple of instances killed young Latino and African-American boys in suspect police stops. Perhaps the break point of it was an instance where the Houston police killed a young white guy named Randall Webster. And it's interesting, the Randall Webster incident, a young white guy who had an unfortunate interaction with the police and he wound up dead, actually became a movie of the week. So that became sort of a tipping point, I think, in sort of these relations. But for me, the message from my parents was simple, that there would be a moment, perhaps, as I was sort of going about my day where I would have an interaction with the police, and that it was critically important, not a suggestion, not a good idea, but frankly, a life and death decision that I was going to have to make about interacting with and surviving that police stop.
What did they say? How did they say to handle it?
The first thing was just body language, to make sure that that my hands were always visible. And candidly, at police stops, they always are now. Because one of the moments during the 80s when in the Houston police example was that he was reaching for something. In fact, we saw that happen to the young fellow in Minnesota who got this, what sounded like a conflicting instruction from the police to simultaneously raise his hands and to reach for his wallet. So my parents were very specific about be sure that you got a detailed instruction, that you're not making any sudden moves, but in all other instances, your hands are visible, that you aren't moving around as the police approach the car. And again, the idea was to survive the police stop. The other piece of it was sort of in the demeanor. A lot of us, many of us are, you know, aren't necessarily happy to be pulled over by the police, and we may take issue in real time with the reason we were pulled over, but it was made clear to me that none of that needed to be litigated on the sidewalk. In fact, it was always going to be a losing proposition to try to talk a police officer out of the basis for a stop. So to simply be polite, sign, you know, whatever there was, and frankly live to sort of litigate or argue about it another day. There had also been instances where older cousins of mine, male cousins of mine, who had interactions with the police. So I think my parents concern was informed by what we had seen even in our own extended family about instances where cousins minding their business or perhaps not minding their business had these interactions with the police, and these default assumptions about the threat posed by young black men would sort of kick in and lead to some unfortunate set of circumstances. So it was in that vein that my parents and candidly my sister's oldest son — I don't have boys myself, but it's a conversation we have had with him. It's about sort of what you look like, unfortunately. I mean, this is America, and if you want to wear your hair a certain kind of way, then you ought to be able to. But the truth of the matter is people draw assumptions about us based on what we look like. So we've had that conversation with him, and I know my friends have had it with their sons. Is it right? Probably not. You know, do we hear those instances where, you know, sort of our white friends perhaps sort of get into arguments with police on sidewalks and manage to walk away? Yeah. Do we see instances where people who have sort of, you know, wagged guns, you know, with the police manage to be taken alive and in custody? Yeah. But at the end of the day, it was just, from my parents' standpoint, I think the same argument that any other parent would have, and it was just about me getting home safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that's not a conversation my parents had with me.
Right.
And I'll ask my producer here. Well, he's shaking his head. Kirk did not have that conversation with his parents either. And that is a sad commentary in a sense, but in the context of what we've seen in terms of these awful incidents from Ferguson to Minnesota to too many other places, within the black community, is that notion of the talk changing, or is it just the same?
It's the same. I don't think that we have seen some precipitous uptick in these sort of and the phrase I use, sort of unpleasant interactions, was actually one used by Jay Johnson, the Secretary of Homeland Security, on one of the Talking Sunday shows. He, as President Obama and as Eric Holder have all described as young black men having had what the secretary called unpleasant interactions with the police. So I don't think that this is a new phenomenon. Certainly social media and the ability of people to live stream and so forth has sort of changed a bit. A lot of the narrative about these interactions being sort of a he said, she said, or he said, he said, now get trumped by the fact that one or others of the parties or a bystander has made some record that sort of refutes the, you know, we saw that happen in the Charleston example, where what was ultimately seen in the video by everyone was in stark contrast to what the police had put in police reports. So I don't think this is new. I do think that the transparency that the technology age has brought to the discussion is a bit new. But the interactions themselves, I think, are not. We are certainly at an emotionally pitched period of time now because of what has happened. I mean, as I see, there was more unrest in Milwaukee last night. So nerves are frayed. And I've got friends. One of my dearest childhood friends is now himself. And I went to a small inner city, all black parochial school in Texas. But one of my best friends from elementary school is now a Houston police officer. And I know he's a good guy. And I just think that there's so much misunderstanding and so much mistrust that is more born out of what we believe we know about another group than there is understanding about the actual person you pulled over or interacted with. So sadly, I think we're at a bad point, but I don't know that this is anything that's necessarily new in the community.
Tomorrow, we'll continue my conversation with John Lewis about the talk.